WikiLeaks has been making some huge waves in the political world lately. That's what today's show is all about. I am Richard Waite, your host. Today is Thursday, October 13th, 2016, and this is A Mostly Accurate View. Going to be a shorter show today. I'm only talking about WikiLeaks today. We're going to talk about the things that have come out the past couple of days. They've dropped three times in the past couple of days, as of the time of this recording. We're going to talk about some of the things that have come out for that, and we're also going to talk about why WikiLeaks is so important and why it shouldn't be. Like I said, shorter show today. I talked about this yesterday. I had some things I had to get done today, still do. That's also why this is a later post. I had a bunch of running around to do this morning. Most likely have a full show tomorrow. We'll see. Really just depends on how much I can get done today. But I would like to talk about yesterday's show for just a second. I have a slight retraction from yesterday's show. I talked about an email that was being circulated that said that Hillary Clinton had used a racial slur generally used for people of Middle Eastern descent. I said that it was important to verify these things before we shared them and posted them all over Facebook and Twitter, because if we share inaccurate or outright false information, it makes our case look weak. I pointed this out because I personally had searched WikiLeaks database for that email and it didn't come up. And then I said that the email was a fake. Well, I was wrong. But in my defense, I hadn't ever seen this particular email before, so I assumed that it was part of the recent releases. Turns out that wasn't the case. I was looking for it in the Podesta Files database. But that's not where it's located. It's located in the completely separate Hillary Clinton database. So I was wrong on that part. The email does, in fact, exist. However, I was right about the larger point in that I read the email, and it turns out that racial slur was not actually used by Hillary Clinton directly, but it was part of a Facebook note that was posted some time ago, which was then copied and pasted into that email to share. And it was given proper attribution in the email. So it wasn't like someone was saying, trying to act like they were saying that. It was like, no, look at this note from Facebook. And I was even able to find the post on Facebook to verify it. So while this email does exist, it's being circulated with the inaccurate conception that, perception. Hillary Clinton actually used this racial slur when she didn't. Now, the ethics and intentions behind copying and pasting and sharing that post that actually did use that slur, which, by the way, was used ironically. The author was talking about how other people might view the subject of his story. But the reasons for sharing the article can be debated. However, it is important to be accurate in what we say. False attacks only weaken legitimate ones. You learn that lesson from the Republicans. They have been attacking Hillary Clinton for so long with every little thing they can find, including illegitimate ones, that everything they throw at her now just slides right off. So if we don't keep our attacks legitimate, our cause will be the exact same, and she'll walk out of this damaged, but ultimately the victor. So my larger point remains, verify your information. Don't latch on to one thing out of context and run with it. It makes us look crazed and obsessed, like we're just out to get her by any means necessary. And I mean, we are to a certain extent, but we have to be more honest about the things that we're doing than she is, or we're absolutely going to lose this battle that's completely stacked in her favor to begin with. All right, so on to the real topic at hand. WikiLeaks dropped twice yesterday and then again this morning. That's six dumps in a week. Assange at the press conference the other week said he wanted to drop every week for the next 10 weeks. So that means that A, these dumps are all considered part of one giant dump called the Podesta files. B, each of these dumps is going to be from a separate individual or organization's email server or account. So we still have 9 more to go. 9 more, just like we saw this week, except for bigger and probably far more damaging. And C, we should probably expect a new set to begin dropping sometime tomorrow. That's just speculation on my part, but it seems to fit the pattern. If you can even call it a pattern yet, we've only been 1 week into it, and all we've seen is Podesta files. So we'll see if I'm right. I hope I am. All right, so in searching through things for today, these are the most interesting pieces that I found. Now, a lot of people have posted a lot of things, and some of them, well, let's just say that they aren't really much of anything. A lot of it is just confirming things we already knew or things that had already been suggested in previous leaks. But some of them are far more enlightening and also damaging. First one I want to talk about here is an email entitled TPA/TPP. Now, this is to several people, including John Podesta, Robbie Mook, Jennifer Palmieri, etc., etc. This guy says, this is Dan Sherwin, Schwerin, something like that. He says, "Hi all, I want to share our draft letter on trade. As you'll recall, the idea here is to use this to lay out her thinking on TPA and TPP ahead of action on the Hill and a joint letter by all the former Secretaries of State and Defense. This draft assumes that she's ultimately going to support both TPA and TPP. It focuses on what needs to happen to produce a positive result with TPP and cast support for TPA as one of those steps. It also says that we should walk away if the final agreement doesn't meet the test of creating more jobs than it displaces, helping the middle class, and strengthening our national security." Okay, that's all fine and dandy. He says at the end, of course, if we go ahead with a meeting with HRC to lay out the pros and cons and then come to a different conclusion, this letter would change dramatically. Meaning that if they talk with her and it's becomes obvious that she's not going to support it regardless, then they're going to change the letter. So he covers his ass and both bases by saying, "Okay, we got this thing that, you know, if she ends up supporting it, this is what we're gonna run with. If she ends up opposing it, we're gonna go with something else, obviously. So we don't really know what she's really gonna do, which is a problem because she's been flip-flopping on it. But it does show something very, very important. They're running with the assumption that she is going to ultimately support the TPP. They're not assuming that she's not going to support it, which is her public position right now. So they are saying, her public position, we don't really believe it. And so we're drafting this letter so that we can be ahead of the game when she eventually does say, yeah, we're doing the TPP. So if you guys didn't believe it before, yeah, she supports the TPP. Even her entire campaign staff doesn't believe that she doesn't support it. They know she does. And if anybody had the knowledge of her to know that, it would be them. So we're going to go ahead and say, yeah, she's full of shit when she says she doesn't support the TPP. Next, this email is entitled Tomorrow. And what it is, it's a discussion about, possible questions that these people may be asked, in an event, a correspondence event, I believe it was. Well, their potential responses. They're discussing their responses to these questions, and it was Jennifer Palmieri, I think it was. Erica Rottenberg says she's looking forward to discussion tomorrow night. Suspects it will be broad ranging, but there are a few things that she wanted to discuss. First of all, she talked about a couple of questions that she had coming in. And one of her answers would be, she says, quote, "It's basically some variation of," this is not quite phrased right yet. "I know when I talk to my friends who are attorneys, we are all struggling with what happened to the emails and aren't satisfied with answers to date. While we all know of the occasional use of personal email addresses for business, none of my friend's circle can understand how it was viewed as okay / secure / appropriate to use a private server for secured documents, and why, further, Hillary took it upon herself to review them and delete documents without providing anyone outside her circle a chance to weigh in. It smacks of acting above the law, and it smacks of the type of thing I've either gotten discovery sanctions for, fired people for, etc." So, well, we knew she had deleted a bunch of emails, right? But they were all just personal emails. And she had, according to her official statement, she had people go through them, and if they weren't related to work, they were deleted. But this is saying that she took it upon herself to review them and delete them. Meaning, she went through and scrubbed her server as far as deleting emails goes. I mean, obviously she didn't use BleachBit. That was Paul Cometa. But she went through and started deleting emails. Because she knew that there was some really, really not good evidence in there. And so she freaked out. So she starts going through and delete. She didn't have her staff do it, which was her public statement. So that's a lie. She did it herself. It wasn't just private emails, yoga classes and weddings and shit. It was obviously work emails. These are all things that we already knew. This confirms it. And that's a pretty big confirmation, honestly. It shows that she committed perjury. She lied in Congress in a hearing about this. And that in and of itself should be enough to disqualify her from the race, or at the very least qualify her for an impeachment. And you don't have to actually be in office to be impeached. You can be impeached after you're not in an office. She was Secretary of State. She was also a senator. She can be impeached right now for the things that she did while she was in office. And one of the sanctions of impeachment, of a successful impeachment, is that you can never, ever hold public office again. So she should be. She should be charged and tried criminally. But obviously, FBI Director James Comey and Attorney General Loretta Lynch are going to help cover their buddy's ass and not recommend indictment and not bring any charges, though she absolutely should be. We got FBI insiders saying that was a top-down decision. None of us understand it. None of us agree with it. Every one of us wanted her security clearance pulled, and this absolutely should have gone before a grand jury. That's from FBI insiders, by the way. All right, this next one is an interesting little exchange between, let's see, Cheryl Mills and Robbie Mook. And it's the subject line is subpoena issuance. They're talking about things that can be said publicly as far as finding excuses for why they didn't hand over all the documents to the State Department when they were asked to. The let's see, it says this is from Cheryl Mills. Oh no, I'm sorry, this is from Philip Raines. Not as flippantly, and maybe just from Nick's mouth, but rather than going around and around on how to release the 55,000 emails, let's just be for what's happening and use this as the excuse. Because we can say, even if state has equities, not providing them would put her in legal jeopardy. Or we could say, happy for them to have it, happy for the public to read them as soon as the state is comfortable, but let's somehow take advantage of this. Now, what they're taking advantage of is the statement from the communications director on the subpoena issuance says, the Select Committee on Benghazi today issued subpoenas for all communications of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton related to Libya and to the State Department for other individuals who have information pertinent to the investigation. The committee has also issued preservation letters to internet firms informing them of their legal obligation to protect all relevant documents. Now, the language in that is, and this is what they're discussing here, how to use this language to their benefit. The language says, we have subpoenaed all communications related to Libya and to the State Department for other individuals who have information pertinent to the investigation. That can be read, that can be interpreted as, we didn't subpoena everything, we're just subpoenaing the communications regarding Libya. So while they should have turned over everything, it's actually required by law, the subpoena was only, language-wise, semantic-wise, was only for Libya emails, and that's what they're discussing. They're trying to find an excuse not to release all of the emails. Well, why would they do that? Why wouldn't they want to release all the emails? If she's on the up and up, there certainly must not be anything worth hiding in there, right? And this is why we don't find Hillary Clinton or any of her staff to be trustworthy. And most of these people on her campaign, these high rollers on her campaign, Robbie Mook, John Podesta, Jennifer Palmieri, they're going to be cabinet members. They're going to be part of her administration. They're going to be the Secretary of State. They're going to be the Attorney General. These are the people right here that she's going to hire. That right there is enough reason not to elect her, because what these people are talking about doing is skirting laws, finding excuses. How can you trust that? How can you trust them? Never be able to. We won't be able to sleep. We're gonna have to watch them constantly. It's gonna be awful. All right, next one is it's from Ron Klain to John Podesta. Saying this was in October of 2015. Subject line is a great night. She was great last night. Thanks for inviting me into the campaign and for sticking with me during the Biden anxiety. You are a great friend and a great leader. It's been a little hard for me to play such a role in the Biden demise, and I am definitely dead to them. But I'm glad to be on Team HRC and glad that she had a great debate last night. Thanks, John. So this guy, who used to be a Clinton operative, he was the chief of staff under Al Gore, who was Bill Clinton's vice president, and he's also the chief of staff under Joe Biden, vice president to Obama, and who was widely considered to be a possible front runner for the Democratic nomination had he decided to join the race. And Joe Biden decided not to join the race for a number of reasons, one of which was the recent passing of his son, which was obviously heartbreaking. And so apparently this guy had a lot to do with convincing Joe Biden not to run. Joe Biden would have been, aside from Bernie Sanders, the biggest competition Hillary Clinton would have had. And his ties to Obama, who was still hugely popular for some reason, probably would have made him damn near impossible for her to beat. So there's that. So the Clinton campaign, the Clinton mafia had operatives inside of the White House actively pushing towards a Hillary Clinton candidacy in 2016 and ultimately a Hillary Clinton presidency beginning in January of 2017. That's some pretty underhanded, shady shit there. I don't know that it's entirely illegal, but it's certainly unethical. And these are the kind of people that we're going to have holding high-ranking government official positions. Cool. Neat. Really looking forward to that. All right, next one I've got here is, this guy. You guys have heard me talk about this guy. One Mr. George Soros. This is good. This is fantastic. So he had made arrangements for a meeting with Mr. Podesta in the Hamptons, where he and his wife have a summer home. That's so nice. So it wasn't from actually George Soros, but it was from his office. Subject line reads, Office of George Soros / Southampton Schedule. And it says, Dear Mr. Podesta, I am writing to follow up on my message below. Please let me know if you are available to join Mr. and Mrs. Soros one weekend at their residence in Southampton. Weekends that would work well for a visit are August 7th through the 10th or August 28th through the 31st. In the original message below, she was just saying, hey, they're going to be vacationing in the summer in the Hamptons like they normally do. They want to see you, just hang out, have a chat. Right. So one of Hillary Clinton's biggest donors over her entire political career just wants to have a little visit with Hillary Clinton's campaign chair. Just want a little visit, hang out, see how the grandkids. Oh yeah, they're good. Good. Yeah, that's what they wanted to talk about. Same thing that Bill wanted to talk to Loretta Lynch on the tarmac in Phoenix about. Golf and grandkids. How's your swing there, Loretta? I'm hitting them backwards myself. Yeah, that's what they're talking about. So, like I said, I've talked about this before. I'm not going to go too in deep with it, but George Soros is a billionaire, and he became a billionaire due in large part to one Mr. Bill Clinton, who used the strictly defensive treaty of NATO for an offensive in Kosovo. And in that action, they secured an area that had some very resource-rich mines in them. And these mines were, at the time, worth about $5 billion. These mines ended up being sold to Mr. George Soros for pennies on the dollar. If I remember correctly, it was less than $150 million. Regardless of how much it was pennies on the dollar. So he made a fucking killing off of that, thanks in large part to Bill Clinton. Well, now George Soros is paying it on the back end with all sorts of campaign contributions and donations to the Clinton Foundation and keeping them very, very comfortable But at the same time, he's continued that business relationship in the aspect of giving them lots and lots of money in return for some access. He gained access to Hillary Clinton while she was in the State Department and basically dictated policy by telling her what her response to a foreign affairs issue should be. And lo and behold, within like 2 or 3 days, her response to that issue was exactly what was laid out and what George Soros had told her she ought to do. That's called a billionaire dictating policy. That's called George Soros being a puppet master and determining what happens. Now, the reason why he wanted to dictate policy in a certain way for that foreign affairs issue is because that foreign affairs issue had an effect on the area where his fucking mines are. Huh. Imagine that. So foreign policy was dictated by a billionaire who had interests in the area, financial interests in the area that were affected by those foreign policy decisions. And those foreign policy decisions were made by Miss Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. Huh. Funny. Weird how that works, huh? Wonder if I could dictate laws if I had billions of dollars. I'm assuming that I could. All right, moving on. As if we needed to be told this, apparently, apologies just aren't Hillary's thing. This is an exchange between Neera Tanden, Jennifer Palmieri, and John Podesta. Starts off with Neera saying, she rocked it, and they should get easier from here. What she's talking about is the apology she gave for using an unauthorized, unsecure, personal, private email server while she was Secretary of State. So she gave an apology over the phone on TV, and Neera Tanden thinks she rocked it. And then Jennifer Palmieri says, I actually cried a little bit with relief. And then Neera says, well, I definitely was able to breathe again when it was over. She doesn't need to master the phoner, but so good for people to see her directly. The phoner is when you call in to a news show like Donald Trump does all the time. Neera said she gets into a rhythm when there's tons of interviews, but I definitely recommend having her beat up a punching bag or a staffer, but that is unpleasant, before she goes on. She really needs to exercise the injustice of it all. So basically they're saying that this injustice of her being held accountable for doing something that she's not fucking allowed to do by regulation of the office that she's holding. How dare they? This is just an injustice that they're attacking her on breaking the law. And she needs to get that out of her system before she goes on. So have her beat up a punching bag or another person, because that's funny. Right on, Neera. And John jumps in the conversation and says, no good deed goes unpunished. Press takeaway was the whine of, but she didn't really apologize to the American people. And he says, I am beginning to think Trump is on to something. I don't know what that means, because obviously they are way harder on Trump than they are on her, with, you know, 3+ hours of coverage of the Trump tapes and like 13 minutes of coverage on WikiLeaks. Sure, right on, John. Yeah, I could see why you might have that opinion. That has nothing to do with you being biased or being a fucking shill. But this is the important part of this exchange for me. Neera replies, everyone wants her to apologize, and she should. Apologies are like her Achilles heel. But she didn't seem like a bitch in this interview, and she said the word sorry. She will get to a full apology in a few interviews. I mean, what is really the big deal to say I made a mistake with not having two emails, and I'm sorry. So they're sitting here talking about Hillary Clinton. They're criticizing Hillary Clinton after, you know, first, she rocked it. It was so awesome. She was so good. I mean, what's the fucking big deal? Why can't she just say sorry? Why can't she just apologize? Bipolar much? We're crying out loud. But yeah, no, dude, she's got a major problem with apologizing. I misspoke. I made a mistake. That's not how I meant it. This is an injustice. Stop it, guys. That's, you don't ever hear her say, you know, guys, I really fucked up. I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have done that. It was an accident. It was a mistake, or not an accident, obviously, because I built a server in my basement. And that certainly wasn't accidental, but it was a mistake. I didn't think that it would be, you know, this big of a deal that it is. And it is a big deal, and I screwed up, and I'm sorry. She doesn't say that. She says, oh, well, I made a mistake. It was easier. And other people had done it. Other people did it before me. They did it. Why are you mad at me for it? This is an injustice. See? And people still use that too. Like, they don't understand the difference between an email account and an email server. Yeah, people have used their Gmail accounts, but nobody built their own fucking server in their basement so that they could skirt FOIA laws. So yeah, she's got a real problem with apologies. All right, next. This one is where they're discussing possible strategic statements of either support or opposition for the TPP. This is kind of what we were talking about earlier, where they were, okay, we're going to draft this letter. We're going to assume that she's in support of the TPP. If she's in opposition of it, we'll have to take it in a different direction. But we're going to go with this assumption right here. Well, this exchange talks about different measures of support that she could have. It says, from Jake Sullivan, he wrote, for TPA/TPP, we have three options. One, the Podesta Jake option, it leads with supporting giving the president authority, but indicating concern with the open-ended grant of authority, and Podesta would add a bracketed sentence declaring opposition to the Wyden bill. So the statement would go as follows. I called Senator Wyden. I told him I believe that President Obama should have the authority to negotiate a good TPP bill that delivers for the middle class, but I don't support extending that authority for years beyond this administration and this trade agreement, and therefore I can't support his bill. That was the part that was in brackets, in parentheses, and therefore I can't support his bill. That's what she's saying to Senator Wyden, apparently, if she even fucking called him. But the key question for me is not the procedure, it's what's in the final agreement. So she doesn't care about the negotiations, she only cares about what's on paper. But the problem is that these negotiations are being held largely by multinational corporations. So who do you think it's going to favor? Should be greater prosperity for American families, not trade for trade's sake, number of pivotal questions, blah, blah, blah. That's the first statement. The second one is the Jennifer Palmieri option, which would lead with TPP and then come to procedure, which is basically it's just a reorganization of the first statement. But it starts out hitting hard on TPP, which says the key question for me is not the procedure, it's what's in the final agreement. It has to pass two tests. Does it protect American workers, raise wages, and create more good jobs at home than it displaces? And second, does it also strengthen our national security? If the agreement falls short of these tests, we should be willing to walk away. The goal is greater prosperity for American families, not trade for trade's sake. And then it says, we also have to get dispute settlement provisions right. So-called investor-state dispute settlement, or ISDS, lets individual companies bring cases to enforce trade agreements. In the past, ISDS has benefited some American companies by letting them challenge unfair actions by foreign governments. But as I warned in my book, Hard Choices, which was a flop. We shouldn't allow multinational corporations to use ISDS to undermine legitimate health, social, economic, and environmental regulations, as Philip Morris has tried to do in Australia. Now, that is a very valid point, and it is very absolutely correct. That is the biggest problem with TPP. There's a lot of problems with TPP, but that right there is the biggest one, in that it gives power to multinational corporations to sue governments whose regulations will decrease current and future profits. They get to sue over lost profits by regulations that are put in place to ensure the health, social, economic, and environmental health of citizens of a certain country. But that's it. This is all words. This is all just, this is her public statement on it. And we know that she's got public statements and private statements, public positions and private positions. So this is nice and all, but it goes to show that her stances are not her own. She is going to do what her donors want her to do, and then she has a staff to write policy positions for her that she can say to the American public and then turn around and push through the TPP in whatever form that it will go through in. So there's that. And then the Robbie option, Robbie Mook's option, which is the favorite of all three of them, as far as this thread goes. Everybody in the thread pretty much chose this one. The Robbie option would lean more heavily and decisively against TPA and TPP. So they all said that she should say she's against it, unless, you know, certain provisions are made. This one has a little bit of a different tone to it. Instead of saying, as far as procedure goes, et cetera, et cetera, this says, as for TPP, I'm going to set a very high bar. It's pretty stern. And it sounds like she's got a nice, strong, firm position on it. But we all know that she flip-flops. In her speeches, the leaked excerpts from her speeches, she basically tells her donors on Wall Street, which are, you know, the big banks and the multinational corporations, that she's got to have two faces, one for the public and one for private. And she knows that they understand this and that they know that she is most certainly on their side. So this just goes to show you guys that they sit there and discuss the best way to say things so that you think one thing. Because from this, yeah, she's totally against TPP. That's pretty strong language. That's, you know, she's taking a stance right there. But the way it's worded and how it's delivered leaves her a whole lot of wiggle room so that when she gets into office, she can turn around and say, oh, well, what I said was I'm going to set a high bar. And you know what? This passed that high bar. So, yeah, I'm signing it. And it'll get pushed through. So there's that. I'd be like, well, she came out and she said she doesn't support it anymore. Right. That's what she said. All right, I'm going to get to these last two here that I've got. They are kind of tied together, so I'm going to basically just go over them, you know, at the same time here. One is titled Follow-Up Media Call. And this one is about how to place stories with the media. That's a big problem because, you know, the media isn't reporting anything. They're just basically passing along these stories that they're being given by the Clinton campaign. So in this email, it talks about a lot of different things, actually. This is a pretty long thread. We see that Nick Merrill wrote, he said, here's the draft of the memo for feedback, both attached and below. So he copy-pasted it into the email and also sent it as an attachment. It's entitled earned media/next steps. It says earned media. We can take the word earned out and say paid. This is paid media. The objective is, As media attention increasingly turns to 2016 and Secretary Clinton continues to move towards a decision of whether or not she's going to run, we want to be proactive in shaping a public narrative that does three things. One, explains on our own terms who she's meeting and talking with, both in terms of potential campaign hires and policy advisors. Two, provides cover and context for recruiting the best people and appealing to those who are looking for signals about whether this is something they want to be part of. And three, begins to build energy and enthusiasm among Democrats for a forward-looking potential candidacy that will offer a bold vision for the future. Now, forward-looking, they love using that. You know what that means? That means not looking back. We're looking towards the future. We're working towards something, and ignore all that shit that's behind me, because if you look at that shady shit, you're not going to want to vote for me. So they love using forward-looking. We're forward-looking. It means don't look in the past, because that shit's fucked up. So this then talks about placing a story. As discussed on our call, we are all in agreement that the time is right to place a story with a friendly journalist in the coming days that positions us a little more transparently while achieving the above goals. Okay, so listen to what that says right there. It's to position us a little more transparently. Planting stories in the media is not transparency. It's the illusion of transparency, and that's what that should have said. Now, of course, he can't say that. What he should have said is place a story with a friendly journalist in the coming days that gives the illusion of a little more transparency while achieving the above goals. And then it goes on to list a number of people that could be involved in the campaign, as well as friendly journalists that have been listed in other emails as well. So that just goes to show you a little more of the collusion and coordination that's been going on between the Clinton campaign and the mainstream media. Now, it is obvious, you know, we see it, we can tell, we see that shit, and but we haven't had, you know, like proof of it until WikiLeaks, and this is yet another piece of evidence of that proof. Now, here comes another one, and this is a different tactic that they use, where Jake Tapper just asked Bernie about his brother's interview. Bernie's brother is a politician over in the UK, running on the Labour Party ticket, he's running for office too. Bernie and his brother are, you know, separate countries, but they were both running for office. So this email says it comes from Sarah Latham, and she wrote, he said his brother is in the UK and doesn't speak for me or the campaign. I don't agree. Then John Podesta replies, I think that I reported I talked to Tad, expressed our unhappiness in vaguely threatening terms. Now, I don't know what he could be threatening with, but that's extortion, and that's media control and media manipulation, and it's very much mafioso type shit, which kind of brings me to probably the most important part of today's show. So we've been spending all this time analyzing every single bit of information that WikiLeaks has put out, painstakingly going over every single detail, every word, every misplaced comma, looking for that smoking gun, looking for evidence of the crime that's going to crush Hillary Clinton and the Clinton mafia. And every one of us thinks that we're Elliot Ness, and we're going to do our damnedest to try and bring this woman down. And that's a good thing, because it's become increasingly obvious that our Justice Department and Investigation Bureau aren't going to do it. But instead, they're going to do the exact opposite and cover for her. Same with Obama. Same with all the rest of them, because if she goes down, they all go down. And that's very important. We absolutely need to do that. But for me, the things that we are already seeing are much more important and dangerous on a social awareness scale. This controlling and manipulation of the media, which is actually the controlling and manipulation of the public mindset, is far more dangerous than any crime she could have committed or have had committed on her behalf. I want her to fall just as much as anybody else does. Don't get me wrong. But if and when we do accomplish that, there is a much bigger problem that we are still going to need to attend to, our media. More and more emails keep coming out that suggest Hillary Clinton and her crew aren't exactly on the up and up. But that's no surprise. We've known this for a long, long time. And thank God we have more people waking up to this fact, because that just puts that many more sleuths on the case. It makes the influence of our information sharing networks that much more powerful. But it points to something much worse as far as our society goes. The real problem isn't just the corruption in our government and the politicians that are paid off to benefit the billionaire class. It's with our media. The corporate-sponsored shills that create and maintain narratives, ignore other information, and marginalize any opposition. They're the ones who have the real control. Now, once upon a time, journalism was one of the many checks and balances on our government that we had in place. That's why freedom of the press in the original Bill of Rights was so important. It was a government watchdog. But then, in the mid-1990s, a certain other person named Clinton, who happened to be president at the time, signed a bill into law called the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Now, this act was a major overhaul of the Communications Act of 1934, which was signed into law and enacted by Franklin D. Roosevelt. And the purpose of that act was to regulate communication by wire and radio to make available as possible to all people of the United States a rapid, efficient, nationwide, and worldwide wire and radio communications service. The 1934 Act also created the Federal Communications Commission to execute and enforce the provisions set forth in that act. Now, the 1996 bill pretty much did the exact opposite of that. It deregulated the media, which by this time had been redefined to include network television and then later on cable broadcasting. And it was sold as a way to allow whoever they wanted to, or whoever wanted to get into media, to get into broadcasting if they wanted to. But in effect, it made it so that currently existing media could be bought by multinational corporations and then built up into the mass media giants that we see today. Now, these mass media giants have largely overshadowed and killed off any independent media, and that was around the time that journalism started dying. What that act also did was to make arrangements that no longer held media accountable. Anybody could report anything they wanted, whether it was true or not, and we used to hold media accountable. People would actually get in trouble, you know, through fines and whatnot for reporting false facts. That was part of the FCC's job. But that doesn't happen anymore. And they can now tell you whatever they want you to hear. FCC isn't much more of a censorship bureau anymore. It just makes sure that you don't hear too many naughty words. Well, this happened around the same time that Wall Street was deregulated by repealing Glass-Steagall. The global market was introduced on a much wider scale by such trade deals as NAFTA and CAFTA. So you're starting to see a pattern here. Every one of these acts, which was sold to the American public as something that would benefit everyday Americans by providing more opportunity for success, ended up benefiting only the large multinational corporations. And then, legalized bribery came into play. All of a sudden, these same corporations could use their free speech in the form of money to influence government. So, starting with Bill Clinton in the 90s, and it actually started before that, but that's when it really started. That's when it really started. So starting with Bill Clinton in the 90s, corporations were able to take over the control of our national economy, our global marketplace, our legislative and executive branches of government, and also our information sources. And you think that Hillary Clinton's going to be any different? Of course she supports the TPP. And if Obama can't get it passed in the lame duck Congress simply because he's Obama and the Republicans hate him, then she sure as shit is going to get it passed when she's in office because Republicans actually like her. And she'll sell that to us because they tweaked certain parts of it to make it more beneficial to the average American working family. But the overall effect is still going to be very much the same. And our media is not going to tell us that because the corporations that own our media want this enacted. You know what comes next? The internet. The law will be amended to include internet communications in the Telecommunications Act. And goodbye net neutrality. And don't doubt for even one second that there won't be a clause in there regarding illegal access to email accounts and servers. I'd venture to say that the FOIA laws will actually be repealed too. So, guys, this is a real problem. All of these things are going to happen if Hillary Clinton is elected. We're already a corporatist state, and she is the queen of corporatists. If you think we're a free country, hell no. We're slaves to the corporation, which uses the false front of our government to control our lives, uses the brute squad of our police and military to oppress and destroy any who oppose them. And it will get worse. You think China and North Korea are bad with their state-controlled media? What the fuck do you think we have right now? We don't live in a democratic state. We live in a fascist state. We can get out of that. It's not too late yet. We can push back against the corporate oligarchy. Fight for our freedoms again. But we can't do that if we continue to support the same system that created the opportunity for this to take place in the first place. We can't do that if we accept at face value what our news media tells us without questioning it. Information is knowledge. And knowledge is power. That's why they want to keep us uninformed. That will keep us obedient. So push back. Support independent media share your knowledge, open discussions. It's not illegal to talk yet. It's not illegal to think yet. So stop letting the corporations do your thinking for you. It's time to wake up. All right, guys, that's all I got for today. As always, you can email me, amostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. You can tweet at me at @mostly_accurate. Like my Facebook page, follow for updates, new posts, join the conversation, comment, question, concern. Tell me what you want to hear. If you think there's something I should be covering, you want to hear me talk about it, shoot me a line. In the meantime, we'll see you tomorrow. Until then, keep talking while it's still legal, keep thinking while it's still legal, and keep moving forward while we still can. Have a good day.